The sensation of retaining this atmosphere, of the Rodino keeping oneself in this higher consciousness, is the means of. She broke off suddenly. 177. I've lost the words, she explained the break. They were right there, and they got lost. I'll do it over again. By means of the heart expansion people call love, the sensation of super sympathy, this outflowing and inflowing, this most thrilling and exquisite life, we come the nearest we can to apprehending the conception of God. It can be indulged at any moment of our days, interpenetrating them with universal life. That is the way we intensify our days and harmonize our lives. But also there's another element to this atmosphere of heart expansion which is the universal substance. It's a lifting quality which is the expression of the individual's contact with it. I partake to the greatest possible extent of the heart expansion. At the same time I sweep on with it, lifting my share of it by means of the energy that is in me. It is as important for me to do my individual part as for the greatest. My heart aches with intensity, the atmosphere is so tremendously vital. You see, this element, which I am admitting by my heart expansion and which has no words to describe it, is the highest greater being we are capable of sensing. The more I enter into it, the greater will be my happiness and richness of perception. 178. The road I know, apostrophe I know now what that phrase means, God is love. It always sounded so straining and affected to me. I don't like it yet, but that is my stupidity. At least I know what it means. There are so many word seeds we don't know how to plant and make them grow into life-giving things. 3. She found it difficult to make an intelligent start in the actual application. Apparently it was to be a repetition, in this field, of her gropings toward realization in others. Again she must arrive at comprehension by cut and try, by the actual doing. But in the doing she found, as always, satisfactions by the way. It is a perfumed work, she told me, like woodsy smells and flowers and odors caught at rare moments. When you lead people out into something they approve of, like nature, then you can work magic on them. This, I suggested, was poetic but inconclusive. Suppose, she countered, you were set down without equipment in a new world, a world of creative power centered in the individual, what would you do? Today I decided that, to succeed with this power, first of all my fundamental outlook must be one of health, harmony and onward-going success. So I started out trying to experience the difference between the road I know, 179, times of depression and those of full and overflowing life. I wanted to make myself a strong magic, that is, I wanted to manufacture it for others, for thus only would I call it into being, with reciprocal action on myself. Then, said Betty, I lifted up my desires, after working them into a concrete conception of a desired end according to my limited light. I held them up eagerly and earnestly and continuously, submitting them to the influence above me, and that influence helped me to remodel them to greater perfection and present possession, directed me in the supporting confirmation of what I desired. That's the way to work. This, said she, with the satisfaction of discovery, is the application of what I experienced when I withdrew inside myself, and shut the door, and staved quiet until I found there was another exit, and so gave my little bit, and the great rhythm took it and amplified it. This is the new exit, the rising above, and all that, is out one. While here, she continued, I can reach out and quicken the thoughts and hearts of any human being I have ever known. What then? What right have I? How do I dare utilize that power, and for what purpose? I cannot see the answers to these questions now. I only know that one who has experienced this power, even momentarily, can never again be satisfied, as is the walnut in its shell. 180. The road I know, she lapsed for a time into contemplation of some inner experience. I asked her what she was doing. I am going through the sensations of another person regarding this influence, she replied. He is a person with an absorbing occupation, one that demands all his working hours and energy, just caught in the habit and fixture of days like that. I am that person. That is the wall I am up against. I have to begin with the tiniest little start of some kind and keep working at it. She was silent for a while. Now then. I only had room in my mind for the hopelessness of doing anything else with my days. This isn't me, she reminded, it's somebody else. Then in a fertile spirited moment a shred of vision came to me, a tiny fleeting glimpse of a different kind of living. Suddenly I saw a beautiful radiance, sensed a better scheme, and because it was the real thing inspiration, because it met the fertile moment in me, it didn't fade out like the worded inspiration in books. It was persistent. A sort of breath of sweet spring growth had come to me in a damp dark dungeon. I was sprouted by it somehow. Now what to do? I am back at the beginning. I am seeing that this sprout thing may be only a cellar sprout. It may be only, for a while, at best a potted plant or a window box, instead of a forest giant fighting storms or spreading silent under the starlight. The road I know, 181, at least it's the way everybody has to begin. Every human being advances by the same path. And the universal experience of it is what satisfies people's minds that, if they are way behind, they must catch up. Well, if that is the way to go about it, sighed Betty, somewhat doubtfully, at least there's something tangible to get at. Chapter 16 Habitual Spiritual Consciousness 1. It was curious and interesting to me to follow Betty's own change of inner attitude toward the thing she was doing. At the start she worked at it only during the especially dedicated hour or so of formal communication. Her object was to get messages. And her chief reaction was of high adventure. But little by little she shifted until her objective became no single concrete thing at a specified time, but a continuous state of mind. The Invisibles approved strongly of this change in purpose, probably all along they had been working to induce it. The sessions, with myself attending, were all right, and necessary and must be continued. But they were now only a small part of Betty's job. Hers was the proverbial woman's work in that it was never done. She must practice, said the Invisibles, by herself. Not in psychics, or communicating, or any of the rest of that, but in realizing, making real, to herself, this newfound inner state. Start first thing in the morning, said they. The first business of each day, they told her, should be a recognition of the sun of your life, unquestioning and eager heart-lifting acknowledgement of 182, the road I know, 183, the warm, loving, positive creative force of the universe beyond your knowledge. Always give time to purify and clothe fitting me your spirit to contemplate the unknown great causal force operating through each living thing. Unless you make a conscious exercise of this, conscious power is not yours throughout the day. And, they emphasized, that power throughout the day must be conscious. Which, Betty acknowledged, was a fine counsel of perfection, but as a practical matter might be somewhat difficult. Highly desirable to float through the hours on a high plane of serenity, but how about telephone calls, and the cook with her lists, and the arrival of the plumber, and but that was not at all the idea. The Invisibles kept at her, and finally managed to convince her. I see, she cried, each day we must create for ourselves by this magic, call it what you please, tuning, ordering, a dignified temple suitable for the habitation of our highest ideals. It is as though one made of each separate day a beautiful little habitation in which to live while the big temple of a lifetime is building. There is retardment and confusion and discouragement in working out the greater scheme, unless the little temple of each separate day is prepared as an inspirational workroom. You know, workmen on big buildings always have these little houses to work from. But they are generally ugly. 184. The road I know. Thereafter Betty never omitted these early morning ablutions, as she called them. Every morning she retired for a half hour to her little sunroom, and nobody was permitted to interfere, not even the cook. Occasionally travel or emergency might prevent. Nevertheless she would always manage to sit quiet, for at least a few minutes, by herself. 2. This procedure was the first step toward establishment of what the Invisibles called habitual spiritual consciousness. Before long they insisted on another. A new field, she reported to me, almost a business-like field, establishing us in the substance of reality. It has to be done or we'll go no further. Otherwise we would go with the drift of those who just experiment or are content merely to be experimented on. That sounds like a threat, I commented. Where might we fall down? A subtle dulling of accustomedness, replied the invisibles. You must partake more constantly of the vitality within reach. The accumulation of the details of living reduced the power to a minimum. There ensued a short pause. The single thing I can get hold of today, Betty said at last, is the drabness of our life. Why don't we, the road I know, 185, intensify it? It can be so breathtaking and so magically progressive. There are not enough breathing spaces, like parks in a city, not enough moments of susceptibility to happiness and well-being. It's not punctuated, it's all run together with the details of living. If we could only make ourselves distribute more and more frequently through our hours little breathing spaces for the spirit to mount a consciousness of strength and well-being, that would be the training we need in the gradual acquisition of the happiness we won't take. But we shut it out for all but the occasional hour, and gradually the barrier thickens. We must keep it thin and easily broken through. It's the frequency, not the length of time, that does it. The more frequently, the richer the personality. It is very difficult to fight the tendency to hibernate in the world. Might just as well do it now. Coagulation sets in, explain the invisibles, if you don't keep broken up, if you don't keep listening at the higher pitch. Habituate yourself to it by utilizing it constantly. This is confused, very much confused, but that's it, put in Betty. Can't find the clear way to put it. It is very bothersome because first a thing seems audible and then visible, but in reality it is all the same sense over here, and you can't tell which when you are separating them into word senses. It's a reality of feel. This is like having too many legs, it's a nuisance. 186, the road I know, a two-legged animal explaining locomotion to a centipede. It is very confusing to have so many senses. But anyway, resume the invisibles. All you've got to remember is that when you make an effort you generate a spark which helps you to enter intermittently that higher more intensive form of life where sparks live. The oftener you do it, the more you get. When you decide it isn't worthwhile, and is too much trouble, you get out of hearing distance. Hold on. I objected. How can you hear sparks? Out of reach, then, amended the invisibles. You get where you think sparks are just impractical, imaginative and impossible. And so you cheat yourself. A few sessions later they brought the whole proposition more into the clear. The time has come, said they, when the thing we have been calling spiritual contact must penetrate into the more practical. It must be elongated, as it were, to touch more commonplace conditions of mind. The effort is now to gain a more particularized method of maintaining the growth already made, to gain the constant refreshment necessary to keep the spiritual life vigorous. Make 3- and 4-minute sessions during the whole day whenever you have an interval. Make it the most vital necessity of your day. At present you are, the road I know, 187, giving us leftover time, and that is discouraging and retrogressive. The everyday every hour attitude of mind is so much more useful than any amount of periodical concentration. The main thing, continued the invisibles, is to keep sweeping back and forth, so the dividing line between the two worlds doesn't show. Commute all the time, it's easy if you keep in practice. It's a definite proposition, as definite as keeping outside your shell. That shell is a very exact symbol. Once allow your consciousness to slip into it, and you are at home and familiar and comfortable, recognizing nothing tangible but its commonplaces. Keep out of it. Train yourself to be at home outside. To occupy, ordinarily, daily, hourly, the highest consciousness you have achieved. A little reiteration will not hurt. It's the carrying through idea, habitual consciousness. 3. Betty did not acquire readily the ease of spirit she ultimately gained. In spite of her new understanding, she sometimes found it difficult to cope with the common distractions, travel, illness, house guests, sheer inertia, and most of all the trivial, accustomed routine of daily living. Little things, often repeated, gain a momentum that is hard to break or check. But slowly her compass swung toward the desired orientation. It is a very interesting experience I am going, 188, The road I know, through, she commented, pruning and rearranging, selecting, stimulating life's directions. So much falling from me, so much expanding before me. My eager impulse towards the things dimly sensed and greatly desired outruns my laboriously slow accomplishment. My heavy self doesn't cooperate with my active spiritual being. By this time Betty was pretty well at home in her disassociated state. The first struggle for re-establishment was over, but the struggle in the tangible world was just beginning. When I'm here, I enjoy myself, she announced one day from that other consciousness. But I am exalted above the confirmation of my powers, and I don't know how to confirm them so they will be enduring. It's as if someone had clothed me in most distinguished estate, and I go in it rather ignobly conscious that it does not belong to me, that I am not fit for it. And I am ashamed not to deserve the beauty and dignity, instead of merely presenting the externals of it. What's the trouble? I asked. Aren't you getting along fast enough to suit you? I still get only glimpses of the great power I talk about and which I am struggling to comprehend, she explained. Of course, I enter the higher level with increasing frequency. There is no question about it, normal consciousness is assuming lesser proportions. But there is pain in the contrasts I suffer. It is Sokon, the road I know, 189, fusing to overlap the two consciousnesses. Just now, for instance, I was establishing myself comfortably, so happy and busy and settled about myself. And then the other focus of my consciousness showed up and said it was intangible stuff. But it is not. Dear me. It is most annoying to have two focuses. What am I to do? She worked on her problem. It is as if I were building something and had just established the corner of the top layer, she continued presently. And then I stopped there and went away, and lived in an entirely different level. I've simply got to make that my home, just as the lower level is now. I've got to live in it and finish it out. There is no use starting it unless you live in it, that just postpones your destiny. That is the trouble with all of us, we keep our ideals as lookout towers, and we seldom take the trouble to climb the stairs. For a long interval Betty was silent. Then, in a puzzled tone, something is growing in me and has put out a shoot. Maybe this physical world is only our roots. Maybe a plant is terribly worried over its first shoot. Another long pause. Now, she asserted suddenly, instead of reaching up, I have moved up. I am staying there. It works, too. Again the pause. Ah, that's grand. She cried at last, in triumph. That's a real vista. I will not have the horrid little near, 190, the road I know, sighted, cramped, strained half-breathed atmosphere of the lesser life. I won't have it. I am going to do my work with a well-ventilated mind, continually conscious of the lifting power of deep-breathed perceptions. I am not going to inhabit my lower level. I am the better workman if I center myself in other regions. She broke off, and for some moments was still. I'm coming back, she ended. Do you know, my body seems like a troublesome child to me now. I drag it around, and bathe it, and dress it, and stand it, and sit it, and fuss over it. 4. It is most important, pointed out the invisibles to Betty, that you do not get a misconception of what we intend to convey by the term habitual spiritual consciousness. This does not imply any retirement into any permanent state of abstraction, nor any priggish watchfulness to determine that your every move is transcendental. It means simply that each day, when you finish your practice, you do not close the experience like a book, but carry it around like a treasured possession. Instead of being completely forgotten, it remains in the back of your mind, communicating its influence automatically to your actions and reactions, and ready at any moment, if specifically called upon, to lend a helping hand. It is particularly necessary, perhaps, to distinguish the road I know, 191, this state clearly from the periods of intense concentration you employ for training and development. In especial exercises such as these, you are for a purpose temporarily focusing on certain aspects of yourself. During these periods, you impose on the other aspects your command that they sit still and do not bother you, so to speak, until you have finished. You totally, or as nearly so as possible, inhibit their activities. You dismiss all reports from the subconscious. You clear the conscious mind of thought. But when you invoke the higher consciousness in the course of normal daily living, you do not do this. The bodily functions proceed with no less, and no more, than your customary awareness of them. Your brain-mind moves forward on its unintermitting stream of thoughts and mental images. A bodily or mental vacuum is unnatural and impossible. To check the flow of these things is also unnatural, and allowable only for a special purpose. Whole living implies the simultaneous functioning of all the parts of yourself. Only the sharp focus of your attention is shifted as desired to that portion of your being where it is important that it should function for the business of the moment. You must at all times remember, however, that it is as serious a mistake to concentrate wholly in the superconscious as it is in the brain, mind, or the body. To each its balance due of yourself, for that balancing is the art of life. Chapter 17. The higher power. I go to the source, said Betty, summing up her own practice. In doing so, I utilize my higher mind, abandon myself to my intuitional, secure in its reality. I give up looking at the source externally. I try to enter into its feeling of power and strength. After I do this a little while, I am no longer an alien thing. I am somehow attached to it sympathetically. Then I keep quiet, very happily and expectantly, and its potentiality seeks in me some little entrance, some crack or cranny through which I receive some little bit. But that little bit does its work. Eventually that bit must be recognized in my own medium for some definite purpose. Now I am magnetized with it, one with it. But finally I have to come out on the borderline, and I take back with me only just as much as will fit into the customary mind's capacity for statement. Sometimes, she confessed, I get sort of thwarted and bored. I have to get over that. She sought for the way to increase her capacity. I am trying to look at the source and understand it for you, said she. It's a kind of disembodied quality. I am on the power side, and being assisted temporarily by great strength and wisdom. Under its spell I'm turning 192, the road I know to look down to see why I don't get more of it ordinarily. 193. All of us, our group, have had a hazy conception that there are such things as spiritual forces that work just as well as our physical forces do, only superlatively. We all admit them, but still our hands and eyes and legs and ears are of far more utility to us. The disembodied quality I am now looking at is what would give us actual possession of the working ability of these higher forces. This quality is not much recognized. Actually, it is just the sureness of your belief in the existence of this greater force. That is the principal thing to begin with. Take an example from natural physical forces. You wouldn't have the nerve or the idiocy to try walking on water, but you step out on ice with perfect confidence. In ordinary daily living, you come to associate your mind so naturally and pleasurably and habitually with the forces which control our physical universe that they grow measurably firm under the feet, as it were. Take gravitation, which always works, the magnetic attraction or the power of electricity. When control is established, the buoyancy of placement in water, any of the natural laws that appeal to you. Our conscious minds approve and abandon all test of them. But these higher forces we have sensed only as weak generalizations. We've got to make them the same in our conscious minds as the natural forces I mentioned, and which we accept as a matter of course. We've got, 194, the road I know, to associate with them, experiment with them, as constantly and interestedly as people did in uncovering the laws controlling the physical forces. The same practice will make our spiritual bodies work. Anyway, it's the first necessity we shall be faced with when we go hence. Everything we have been accustomed to will have gone away from us. If we haven't built this extension of confidence in the new forces, we shall be at a loss. This particular attitude of mind, surety, confidence is itself a force, it is a superlative force. What we are stepping around, said the invisibles, is to avoid the use of the word faith. We don't want to use it until we have freshened it. It's been made respectable by calling it suggestion. You all know the power of that. Only this is its simon pure reality, its essence. There was a short pause. They told me I couldn't get much of it, Betty resumed, only enough to begin with. I'll tell you how I'm doing it. I made a sort of cradle of confidence of the tides and the moon and the planetary swings, and I said, there's no reason why I shouldn't rest this spirit of me securely in these unfailing forces. I felt delightfully in suspension, restful with everlasting arms restfulness. This extension of my personality, the reality I call myself, has quite reasonably ventured out to associate with unseen but thoroughly tested realities. That's the beginning, the road I know that is how we begin to grow into the higher forces. 195. I have a funny way of working. I vary all kinds of tests. I jump up and down on these bigger laws to feel their reality. Mentally I turn and twist them all, and jiggle them around, and they still hold me up with a sureness of cause and effect. Now I will leave that testing side for a minute and just seek the society of the greater forces. A long silence followed. Feels sort of like a blind person walking along, said Betty at last. I know by the feeling when I get in a sunspot of power, and I try to keep in it, and when I stray out of it I try to get back. I know it's there, and I just have to make my senses so acute that I can keep in it or get back to it if I stray. Each person must play his own mental game in this thing. I am only suggesting mine. All this is an effort to establish us firmly in the spiritual so we can utilize its greater powers in doing the physical things we see are worth doing. This definite belief in a force assisting our best efforts, and our reckoning on its unfailing help, the establishment of this principle of the constructive, directive forward movement which we call evolution, this condition of faith must at some time or other in our progression be permanently accepted by our united being. Now the point is this, stated the Invisibles, the 196, the road I know, exists in you, indefinitely developable, an engine of power, dynamically creative, capable of impressing and molding your material world according as you give out from your inner being its creative force. This force is not primarily the mentally creative force, which you understand perfectly. It is, as it were, a higher sense of that mentally creative force, in short the vital principle of life. It comes, not from that mere agent of the soul, the intellect, but from the plexus of life itself. Mental force can make a mold or plan, but for completion this plan must have the vital principle supplied. Mental force is the neatly made electric globe into which the current is not turned. The true creative force, on the other hand, carries its own vital principle with it. It is a matter of the heart as well as the clearly seen concept of the mind. Betty groped for definition in words, and as always she was dissatisfied. I'm trying, Betty said, to get a clear idea of this spreading, creative, radiant thing I'm associating with. It is a supporting force pertaining to the reach just above us. I like to get in it and be swept along with it, but I don't think I'm ready. It goes on to such a vast ocean beyond my comprehension. It's so nameless I don't know where to begin to cut it up into words. If I do that, I'm afraid it won't piece together again. It's too big for language. All I can say, the road I know, 197, is that it's the biggest union of life, the nearest to harmony, the most collected force. Harmony is so poor a word. It isn't a bad word, it's just a mistreated word. I want to give freshness to that word. Now it's just a semi-religious, semi-musical term, but really there is rising tide of progress connected with it. Well, in spite of its inadequacy it represents a strong factor in this force that upholds this tide of extension. But it is not the thing itself, only a shred. The thing itself is not willpower, either, that's only another aspect of it, just one more place where we've touched it in comprehension. What I am trying to get at is the whole of this force, not only the detached bits we recognize in words of willpower and concentration, but the complete power of it. There is always a contracted and an expanded form of everything, contributed the Invisibles. Willpower is the contracted form of this higher thing. You can step into it from willpower without contracting if on think of it more as desire power. Willpower is in spite of your desires. One day Betty, more or less in desperation, I suspect, tried the label of pure feeling. But she recoiled from it at once. the phrase had been too much knocked about by sentimentality.